I'll be reading Psalms 128, a song for pilgrims ascending to Jerusalem. How joyful are those who fear the Lord, all who follow his ways. You will enjoy the fruit of your labor. How joyful and prosperous you will be. Your wife will be like a fruitful grapevine, flourishing within your home. Your children will be like vigorous young olive trees as they sit around your table. That is the Lord's blessing for those who fear him. May the Lord continually bless you from Zion. May you see Jerusalem prosper as long as you live. May you live to enjoy your grandchildren. May Israel have peace.
Awesome. In the book of Psalms, here we go. Good morning. Just like seeing you. Glad you're together. Megan, impromptu, spoke of gathering together, the power of being together. Jamie read a psalm about being together, and we're going to dive into some psalms today that are about the power of being together and the joy of being in the city of God as the people of God. And as I was preparing these psalms, I was starting to kind of get alarmed that there was four of them. And so I thought, I better pray, God, help me reduce this down to one for you all. But nope, we got four. Four psalms today, 122, and then 126, 127, and 128. They all go together, but it's a lot. And one of the ways, if you kind of are prone to being distracted just by existing, you can help yourself learn just by clicking over on the church app. If you click on this weekend, it's the very first button you'll see when you get the app open. You click on this weekend, it'll take you to message notes. And when you click on message notes, you'll be able to fill in a little digital message note thing. And I don't, maybe you don't function this way. I do a lot better when I'm able to fill something in and fill something out. And if I think of something that I want to remember, rehearse, or otherwise look over, then I have to be able to do that right there, type it in pretty quick. So my hope is that these four psalms do something special in your heart. Or at least a portion of these psalms do something special in your heart. I believe that in these words, you're going to see some truth that can alter your life, that can heal your life, it can bring deliverance to you, or it can reshape your vision of what it looks like to be well, to be healthy and vibrant. And a lot of these psalms speak of that, right? The book of Psalms is 150 books of what we would call prayer songs or song poems, 150 song poems. And they do a lot of things. They help us see how to praise God. They help us really to see the importance of prayer. They help us express sorrow. They help us to see and be shaped in how we express that sorrow to God and our dependence on God. It shows us the power of praise. And also, it points to the fulfillment of prophecy. All of this happens in the book of Psalms. And in a poetic way, the book of Psalms rehearses and reviews the history of Israel and kind of shows us the storyline of the rise of King David, the fall of King David, the exile of God's people, but the hope for restoration in the end. And all this happens in the Psalms. So good. You have to be careful that when you look at the book of Psalms, you don't just see confusing poems or confusing songs. Or you have to be careful that you don't pick out a phrase and say, this is for me and probably about me, right? We see the whole tapestry of this book of Psalms as a whole piece of art, a piece of literature that helps us learn how to praise God and to spend a lot of our heart's time hoping for a future Messiah, which is all promised in the scripture, in the psalm. So here's the main idea today. You ready? Ready to change gears? Going to get going? Dig in a little bit together. I hope this comes alive to you, even just a portion or some of it. I hope it comes alive to you. Here's the main idea today, that God alone is working. God himself is always at work. He doesn't sleep. And then in the King James, there's another word that he never does, which is slumber. doesn't sleep or slumber. I don't know why you have to say sleep or slumber, because to me it sounds like you're saying God never sleeps or sleeps. Same thing. He is always at work, and he's working because he's the source of our everyday peace and joy and prosperity. Let me say it again. God's at work, and the reason he's at work, well, there's a lot of reasons. One of them is because he's our source of the things we need. He is the source of our every single day peace, joy, and prosperity. It comes from God. He's at work. And he's doing that so you and I can flourish. Love that word. That's my word of 2022. I'm holding on to this word, flourish. Enough loss, enough sadness. I don't know about you, but I am ready for 2022 flourishing. You know what? I'm not going to wait till then. I'm ready for flourishing starting now. I'm not waiting till then. I'm starting last January. No, I'm going back 2019 flourishing. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it out loud. Flourishing. Why? Because we are with a creator who is always at work providing everything we need so you and I can flourish. And while we're flourishing, we can rest. Why are we resting? Because God's at work. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm so sorry. I'm preaching the message here in the main idea. By applying, here's how we flourish and rest. We apply his wisdom. So he gives us wisdom. We apply that. We flourish and we rest knowing the whole time God's at work. That's it. That's the message. That's it. We just finished. The Lord is powerful, isn't he? He is miraculous. There are psalms that inspire us to an everyday life of expressing our wisdom and applying, expressing our worship and applying God's wisdom. Let me say that again. There are psalms, we're going to read four of them today, that inspire us to an everyday life. You know what? I want you to catch the word everyday. Not a life of 60, 70, 80 years, not a general lifetime, but keep track. We're inspired. If you are in the Psalms, there is an everyday life of expressing our worship and applying God's wisdom available to us every day. I need more than ever an everyday God. Every day engaged in who he is. Every day engaged in what he's accomplishing and what he is inviting me into. So we'll be in Psalm 122 and then Psalm 126, 127. And 128, and we see God's heavenly wisdom for his church, his people. By the way, his church in the Old Testament called Israel. His church in the New Testament called his church, his people, his family. In the Old Testament, to be God's family, you would have to be in the line of Abraham. You would have to have a descendants of the Hebrew people. God has selected and elected Abraham as his people. He said, I'm going to be your God. This is our covenant, and you're going to be my people. And God gives his people in the Old Testament wisdom about their church, their family, and their restoration and their rest and also their family life. All of that shows up as God introduces. So you know what I did? I tried to grab the maximum number of verses where you and I could get a feel for these Psalms. There's not enough time to really dig into all of them and feel them all, but I tried to do maximum verses without kind of maybe losing you a little bit. But I hope that by getting the maximum number of verses out here, we start to read this together and we start to feel the feels. Because when you're in the Psalms, you're supposed to feel the feels. When you're in other parts of the Bible, it's not necessarily why that book is there. You might need to know the knows. You know, all of it, of course, is to discover who God is. He's revealing himself to us. But the Psalms are full of feeling the feels. It's okay. It's all right. Here's the first feels we get in Psalm 122. This is the psalmist, and the psalmist is writing, I was glad when they said to me, let's go to church. I was glad. It reminds me, when I was reading this, I was reminded of what I was hearing from some of you all after the shutdown, and we were kind of like scattered for a long time, and there was all this kind of confusion and hesitancy about gathering back together. And then we gathered back together, and I heard people say, I was glad when they said, let's go, let's be there, let's gather. And I was mildly surprised at the energy around finally sensing the power of being back together. And in the Old Testament, by the way, this God had a city called Zion, Jerusalem. And the reason why that city was empty of the Hebrews is because they were overrun by the Babylonians and they were in exile. So then they would have to take pilgrimages to get back to Jerusalem. And when they got back to Jerusalem, here's what they would say. When someone said to me, let's go, let's take the pilgrimage, let's go back to God's city of Zion, I was amped up, I was pumped, I was feeling it. Someone said, let's just watch it on live stream. And I said, get behind me, Satan. I'm going. I'm all over this, and the tribes of Israel, all of them, the Lord's people, make their pilgrimage here, and they come to give thanks to the name of their Lord. So the psalmist is saying, when we had the opportunity to get together as God's people in his temple and take the trip back to Zion, Jerusalem, after being exiled, I was pumped up. I was so excited about that opportunity to get together with their church family and to give thanks to God. And this is, of course, the pilgrims who are attending annual festivals together. They would make a long trip to get there. I mean, how many of you think, good grief, I'm thinking about kind of attending a church, and it's 25 minutes away. I don't know if I have the time. These people, not to compare the two because this was annual, but they would travel from one country to the next, from one portion of the world to another portion of the world. So pumped up about, I love that. I'm inspired by that. So for the sake of my family and friends, here's the psalmist. I will say, may you have peace. That's in yellow because that's a loaded phrase. That's a loaded sentence. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek what is best for you, O Jerusalem. What's best? He's praying that he, his family and friends, all who belong to God, would have peace. They loved their city, and they prayed for its flourishing. If the city was flourishing, God's name was flourishing. And they pray for shalom over God's city and his church. God's divine purpose is the flourishing prosperity of the house of the Lord, his city, and his people. So, what does that psalm mean? In essence, what we get out of Psalm 122 is this: our God is the source of all of our peace and prosperity. All of our peace and prosperity. Now, this is so important. We have to be very careful when we talk about peace, because when you and I think of peace, we tend to think of there's no conflict. There's no war, right? If you have a peacetime president, what does that mean? Everybody's getting along? Everybody's in unity? Everybody's voting the same way? It doesn't mean that. When we have a peacetime president, what does that mean? That our country has a president who's presiding over the country without a war somewhere. It's the absence of conflict. But in the Bible, the word peace can refer to the absence of conflict, but actually the word is more. It actually means, peace means the presence of something far more. It's not the absence of conflict, it's the presence of something better in its place. And that's what the word points to. And the word is shalom. The Bible Project has an awesome segment of watching narrated videos as they describe so many parts of the Bible. It's worth checking out. You can get there through our app or just go to BibleProject.com. But they have a word study on the word shalom. And when I saw that word study via video, I started to think to myself pretty quick, I wish I had this word in my heart a lot more than I do. And it's another word that I thought, I'm going to start trying to think in terms of God's words like shalom. Shalom in the Old Testament is a Hebrew word, right? That's the word in the Hebrew. In the Greek, it's eirene. It's a different word meaning something very similar. But the most basic meaning of shalom is complete or whole. Complete or whole. So it refers to something complex. There's lots of pieces. It's in a state of, but all those pieces are in a place of completeness or wholeness. Some of you might have a good picture of it when your adult children are living around the country and finally they all gather at the home and they get around the dinner table because it's Thanksgiving, and you take a big deep breath and you go, all these crazy lives and moving parts and pieces are sitting in one place, eating together. Finally, there's wholeness in my life. If you're a grandparent, you know exactly what I'm talking about if that ever happens, right? This is the way the world is supposed to be. Here they all are together, right? There's a completeness, a wholeness. So to bring shalom literally means to make complete or to restore. If you want an image of what this looks like, imagine a brick wall and all of the bricks in the wall are in place. There's no cracks, there's no holes, it's all been sealed. And that entire wall is full of all different pieces and all different elements, but it's all complete and it's all finished. Shalom. The wall is complete. Nothing's missing. Wholeness and restoration. So imagine that image. No gaps, no missing bricks. This is the ultimate state of existence of God's church family. So when the psalmist is praying, I pray for peace. This is what he's saying. He's praying, I pray that in your life of faith, in your church, and in your home life, and in your heart, there's wholeness, completion. That's his vision of what it means for you and I to live at peace. Not just like there's abusers in the home and they're gone for a week. Not just there's all kinds of bickering and fighting and chaos in my life and I finally get a break because I'm at work or I'm shopping at Target for an hour. This means that there is something present in your life and it's complete and it's whole, and this is what he's praying for his people. When the Lord brought back his exiles to Jerusalem, it was like a dream. It was like a fantasy when we were all brought back from exile to this to the city of Jerusalem. We were filled with laughter and we sang for joy. So symptomatic of shalom is a sense of joy. And the other nations were so incredibly impressed. Well, I'll read it. What amazing things the Lord has done for them, the people of Israel. Yes, the Lord has done amazing things for us. What joy. Look at how much amazing did God do for his people. So much so that pagan, godless nations were kind of like, wow, that's impressive. Your God's done amazing things. But do you believe in God? Not really, but your God is amazing. And that amazing winsomeness came out of the completeness, the peace that resided among the people of God, among the Israelites. So God delivered them back to Jerusalem together, and now they're just reflecting on the amazing past of God's deliverance from Egypt. Even now, they're praying for future restoration, right? Here's what it sounds like. Restore our fortunes, O Lord. Okay, so there's peace and completeness on the inside, but they're saying, restore our fortunes, O Lord, as streams renew the desert. Those who plant in tears will harvest with shouts of joy. They weep as they go to plant their seed, but they sing as they return with the harvest. So let me slow down here, because this is supposed to be powerful language that you feel as the psalmist writes it. And I'm just prompted to consider how many of you, I just referred to these last couple of years and the season that many of us have experienced where we feel like it's been a long time planting in tears. And I think this phrase is for someone. This phrase is probably for a lot of us. Those of us who feel like, if I were to describe my season, it's a season just tears. Sometimes I don't even know what the tears are about. Sometimes I do. And these words of the psalmist can shape your prayers, because this season that they're praying about has movement. It has progress. It has an ending, right? Those who plant in tears will harvest something special. And what do they harvest? You can tell me. What do they harvest? Shouts of joy. We may be weeping now. You may be weeping now. Your family may be weeping now. Your heart may be weeping now. For all the reasons that are hurtful and painful. But later on, there's a harvest for those who have planted in tears. And the harvest later on is joy. One of the things that I think marks Christian music, By the way, I happen to believe, and this is a side note, I believe that all music is God's music. I mean, I think God has created music. It's a language. It's a language that can break down and injure people, or it's a language that can encourage and build up. It's a language that can honor and elevate sin and sinfulness, or it's a language that can honor and elevate who God is. But one of the things that I've noticed about really solid music that I would consider in the Christian category is that it's honest about the seasons of tears, but it somehow always makes a transition to a new season of harvest of joy. In other words, there's a happy ending. And that's what's unique about some of the psalmist's writing is no matter how dark the psalmist gets, no matter how bleak, no matter how the season of weeping seems to be so painful with all kinds of dramatic and painful words, the psalmist eventually always moves on to the end. And the end is a harvest of joy. They weep as they go to plant their seed, but they sing as they come back with the harvest. And I am trusting and believing and saying out loud with faith and confidence that something special is ahead for you and your family as the seasons change from weeping and tears to harvest and joy and singing. And my prayer, my hope is that in your heart, when God's ready to plant those things, he finds some tenderness, some soil that is soft, not soil that's bitter and resentful. Because those seasons of tears sow the roots for bitterness and resentment, frustration, anger. And all of that can be expressed. But church family, would you hold out some hope for us that our hearts are tender, and when it's time, this harvest of joy is going to cause us to sing. Some people have a lot of preferences about their singing on Sunday morning, and sometimes I feel like I don't care what we sing. If we sang the Bee Gees, I don't care. I'm singing at the top of my lungs because I've been crying all week. I'm ready to sing. Not really the Bee Gees. I don't know where that came from. Satan? I don't know. Just guessing. But I just like to sing together because it helps me really focus on the harvest. What does that mean? All that we have in Christ. All that we have been given in God giving us himself. So keep this in mind. Our God is the source for all of our renewal and all of our restoration. It comes from God. And if you're in a season of loss, may I encourage you to hope for a season of restoration? Because God's a restoring God. The Psalms are no less pointing to the restoration of God. And they're coming from people who have been exiled, persecuted, and enslaved, whose firstborn children, boys, were killed, murdered, genocide by the ugly, evil, and wicked pharaohs of nations. But they're people who hope in restoration. God brings it back. Israel had long seasons of great spiritual fruitfulness and vitality marked by joy. But communities of faith like ours often have seasons where we have times of great spiritual dryness. There's a word in the Old Testament called Negev, and Negev is a word for dry, arid desert. And the scripture says some of us are in seasons of Negev. It's like a desert. But eventually, in restoration, streams spring up. And sometimes it's instant, like a waterfall, just filling the dryness, filling the desert and overflowing. Other times, it's like rainstorms that come in and bring freshness immediately. But whether it's instant or whether it's a season of streams kind of building and building and building over time, the community is restored dramatically. But there's also a slower path to renewal. Right? And let me ask you, I like doing this because I kind of get a feel for where you're all at. How many of you would say, normally when you sense God renewing and restoring things in your past or in your present, he seems to work a slower path to renewal, long seasons. Would you raise your hand? Where are my slow path people? It's slow path, right? And I don't know about you, but the microwave, I think, is the greatest illustration of the kind of Christians we are. When we think about God answering prayer and God working in our lives, we think in terms of microwaves, right? Let's see. Pastor said, the Bible said, my friends and family told me, beep, 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 beep. This ought to take a minute. But how does God work? Centuries. Centuries. Do you know how long the Old Testament, the last Old Testament book was before the New Testament showed up, where the announcement of Jesus' arrival showed up? Do you know how long it was between the Testaments, between Jesus' arrival and the last book that a prophet wrote talking about God's plan? 400 years. Most of us here haven't even lived to be 100. 400 years. When God said, I promise, and then he said, the promise is here. 400 years. Seasons of renewal feel like sometimes 400 years. That seems like a long time to me. With God growing trees, have you seen the most beautiful trees on the planet are not those little skinny Charlie Brown trees? They're not beautiful. That's why they use a skinny little tree in the Peanuts cartoon, because it's ugly. And Charlie Brown has an ugly Christmas tree. The beautiful trees have layers of growth over centuries of time, and there's so much beauty. Some of you who work with wood, you know those layers of years, they mean something. They add precious value. God is a God who renews us over centuries of time, and in our lifetime, it's decades of time. But he's always at work providing everything you need. He's always at work. He doesn't sleep or sleep. He's always at work. So, those who sow with tears are those who painstakingly, in the scripture here, are praying. They're praying over their lives, over their family. They're weeping over their own sin. They're weeping over the sin of their world. They're praying and weeping over the people without faith. And sowing, just like in farming, by the way, you sow those tears, and it takes a whole season to get to the harvest. But faithful prayer and faithful obedience, eventually you see that God begins to help us bear fruit in our lives. So when you're praying, you can pray this psalm. And you can pray this psalm while God is at work renewing and restoring things that you may not see now. But that's the way that he works. So how dependent are we on God's work to provide this garden, this fruitfulness? How dependent are we? Check this out. Unless the Lord builds a house, the work of the builders is wasted. In other words, he's not building your house and restoring everything because you're so obedient. He, instead, is at work doing the building. Unless the Lord builds a house, the work of the builders is wasted. Unless the Lord protects a city, guarding it with sentries will do no good. It is useless for you to work so hard from early morning until late at night, anxiously working for food to eat. Why? Because God is the one who is at work, and he gives us rest. He's the one that's doing what we need, and for us, he gives rest to his loved ones, those who are obedient, those who are in his family, those who belong to him by faith. So God alone is building your house. God alone is building his city. God alone is at work building a flourishing family. He does all that work, and that means something to us. Even the children we have are a gift from the Lord. They're a reward from him. So the basic theme of this psalm here in Psalm 127 is pretty simple. Without the Lord's generous blessing at work, without him generously blessing and adding to your life his joy and his happiness, all human toil, all human effort is worthless. Our house, our city, our work, our food, even our children, all of them are gifts from the Lord. I know some of you think of your children, you're like, can I return the gift? Is there a receipt? Is there a receipt? Is it too late? Amazon says January 31. That's what you, that's as long as you get. But all those things, let me say that again. Our house, God's city, our work, our family, children, gifts from God. He's at work providing those things. So, our God is the source of all of our flourishing, and because he's at work providing all those things, he's also our source of rest. We get to rest because God is at work. He is our source, and he is working to provide all the things we need, all the good things that we enjoy. And by the way, since he's providing all those things, it means we can calm down. We can calm it down. We can ramp it down a little bit. We can dial it back, right? If you're a stress and anxiety person, we can dial it back. Why? Because God's at work, and unless he's doing something special, we're not going to make that special thing happen. We don't have the power to do that. We're receiving these good things. It's on God. He is providing these things. And the work needed to build your everyday life of cultivating a home and working for food and finding rest and raising children, it's all God's work, right? And he invites us into it, and we partner with him to do it. But ultimately, it's on him to provide and achieve all the good things that you need and want in your life. It's on him. These things are all from God. These things are all built by God. These things are all protected by God. These things are all for God. So, if you trust that God is at work providing his best things for you, you'll be able to rest. Everybody take a deep breath. You don't have to. I don't want to control you or manipulate you. But if you're willing to play along, just take a deep breath. Take it in. Take it in. God is at work, and everything you need, he provides for you. You can dial it down a little bit. Take a rest. Husbands, turn to your wives and say, take a rest. No, just kidding. Don't do that. Take a rest. There's an if here. If you trust that God himself over creation and all of the universe who put it into places at work providing, if it's all coming from his hand, the best things that we need, not always what we want, the best things that we need, you'll be able to rest. And let me put it another way. If you're restless, it's quite possible you feel like that everything you need is on you. You have to build the house. You have to provide the fruitful labor. You have to kind of get your family growing and going and expanding and nourished and healthy. Now, am I saying that we take a passive role? Of course we don't take a passive role. But who's responsible for all those good things? The Father in heaven who created all is providing those things. And unless he is doing it, it's all vanity. It's all vanity. Flourishing and rest are not ultimately our accomplishments. They are God's gifts. It's useless to trust only in yourself. And some of you, I mean, this is a great little conversation piece, but a lot of people have lived a lot of their life, seasons of their life, where they're in charge. And I've had people tell me this on a regular basis when I say, how did that go for you? Well, I was in charge of everything. I was self-determining every aspect of my life. How did that go for you? Well, that's why I'm here to talk to you, because not so good. Dead ends, scary drop off the cliff, head-on collisions in my emotional life and my social and relational family life. So it's useless to trust only in yourself. God gives us the rest. We don't trust in our own effort. So overworking and over-worrying and overstraining are foolish. And the psalmist teaches us that those things, it's wrong and foolish to overdo it and to over-depend on ourselves. And so too, our thriving, happy, fulfilled children are also God's doing. And this means that we can retire from all helicopter parenting. We can retire. We can leave the helicopter parenting up to people who are in a panic that they have to be in control of all the outcomes and all the achievements and all the successes of their kids. That's what it means. It means that we can get out of the over-controlling and over-manipulating the outcomes and the circumstances, and we can take a step back and find inner rest even when you're a concerned, fully engaged, serious parent or grandparent. So we have to be when we read this, it has to generate a warning in our own hearts that hyper-control cannot and will not ensure their own health and their own happiness. Hyper-control does not ensure any of that. Unless the Lord enters their lives, unless the Lord does something new and dramatic and deep in their lives, controlling and orchestrating circumstances are in vain. The psalmist says as much. So giving our children to God is the only way that we eventually get to keep them for him forever. And if you know that, the one who loves you unfailingly is in complete control and in complete charge of history, you'll be able to get some more rest and sleep. You do the slumbering, God doesn't, right? You get to rest and he doesn't. So if you're overworked and overstressed, it's possible you're forgetting who God is and what he's at work doing. It's possible that it's just a matter of not remembering, or in the words of George Bush, President Bush, you might be misremembering. And Jesus said, apart from me, you can do nothing. So faithfulness in everyday life of faithfulness that you and I live is a combination of worship and it's a combination of wisdom. We worship God for all that he is, and we use wisdom to apply all that he says and all that he expects. This is where your joy comes from. How joyful are those who fear the Lord? By the way, the fear here, right, if you're not from a church background or you're from a church background where you grew up and it was a little bit tense and maybe even, I don't know what the word would be, maybe spiritually, I guess the word would be abusive, spiritually abusive, maybe spiritually harsh. If that's your background, this fear means something different to you than what it's intended to mean. Fear doesn't mean that I am desperately afraid that God doesn't love me or somehow he's going to punish me in ways that I can't recover from. Fear means reverent, awesome respect that God has eternal power to accomplish anything, and I don't, so I'm submitted and I'm under him, right? Most parents want their kids to have a healthy fear of them, but you have a problem if your kids have a flinching fear, right? If the kids are flinching when you're lifting your hands up, there's a problem. But if you raise your voice and everything stops, there's a healthy fear maybe. And this is what the psalmist is saying, that people who fear the Lord live lives of joy. They're not bored, looking for things to do, throwing rocks at sinners and protesting immorality. These people who fear the Lord are full of joy. And these people are also, because they, how do we know that they fear the Lord? They're following his ways. They're obedient. They're applying his wisdom to their life. How joyful and prosperous you will be if you fear the Lord and follow his ways. Now, how many of you were also telling me, Pastor, there has been a phase in my life where I did not fear the Lord. I was really living for myself, by myself, and I wasn't following his ways. I was self-determining my own life. And it's true, I experienced a lack of joy in my life. Did anybody say that's true for you? There's a lack of joy there? Emptiness, confusion. Our God is the source for all of our wisdom and all of our joy. It comes from the Father in heaven. And you might say, well, what does it look like to flourish? It's wisdom and joy. Wisdom and joy is the evidence of flourishing. Someone who's flourishing is applying God's wisdom, and they're experiencing joy that comes along with that. And by the way, our God has a vision for prosperity and joy in our home, and it requires wisdom. In fact, the book of James, the author James here says, pray for wisdom, ask for wisdom, and when you do that, what happens? God just starts giving you wisdom. You have to seek it and ask for it, right? And the joyful and prosperous are the ones who are fearing the Lord and following his ways. And I don't know, I mean, sometimes when I think about a vision of joy, for we who are American Christians, sometimes I think our vision of joy is different from God's vision of joy, right? Maybe a promotion at work, the fulfilling career we've always wanted, some alone time in the car so I can go through the Starbucks drive-thru and just be happy for 5 minutes. A vision of joy that might be financial freedom, family vacation to Disney that we've always wanted. I can picture the joy maybe of getting some more love and attention from my husband or some more affection and respect from my wife. Maybe our vision of joy is success and achievement of our kids. But here, in this psalm, God describes the vision of joy, the vision that he has of joy for us in its fruitful labor, work that has fruit. And he describes a flourishing marriage, and he describes a table full of children, and he describes enough physical energy to enjoy your grandkids. And that sums it up. That's not the entire biblical vision, but that's what's here in the psalm. The core idea of the psalm is that life is complex. It's full of moving parts. There's a lot going on in relationships and situations, and when any of these things are out of alignment or missing, our shalom breaks down. It's incomplete. There's missing joy. Life is no longer whole and needs to be restored. So how do I experience this joy and prosperity? Submit to the Lord, submit to God, and follow his wisdom, right? That's a repeat of the psalm. And it leads to the restoration of a life of wholeness. And this goes for human relationships. In the book of Proverbs, by the way, if you haven't gotten into Proverbs, another book so worth reading. To reconcile a broken relationship, according to the book of Proverbs, helps bring shalom. Reconciling broken relationships brings shalom. Family, friends, spouse. And so, real quick, we look again at where this comes from. How joyful are those who fear the Lord and who do things his way, follow his way. And all of that is Megan referred to this, right? If I just don't think about it, I'm focused on all kinds of things that distract me and disorient me and disgust me. And I have to remember and remind myself that I have to focus on the way that God does things, the way that he desires things. And one of those things is a family. The shalom of our family, a loving spouse, growing children, those are great blessings that come from God, but there's sin in the heart. And of course we know there's evil in the world, and all this joy and prosperity is disrupted. You might think, no, the joy is disrupted by my disobedient children and my unloving, inattentive spouse. But really, that all comes from sin, right? And it all comes from the evil that's in this world that disrupts all of the human family. And so a lot of people wish to finally have a family. And then some people have a family, and now they wish they had a different family. And some people wish they had a family that just didn't hurt everybody all the time and make it hard to be together and enjoy the turkey and cranberry sauce. So these people, I mean, Jesus said, my family is not the family that you gather with at Thanksgiving. My family is all who belong to me. Jesus said, I have a family, and it's bigger than your nuclear family. It's a faith family. It's a Jesus family, and you belong to that family by submitting to the Lord and following his ways, repenting, believing, and receiving, and you join his family. So the church, by the way, must not only support and repair families, but also find a way to become the family of God that brings joy and shalom in people's lives. We have to find a way to do that, whether you're married or whether you're single, whether you're childish, or even childless. In the church, we have to find ways where all those people can flourish in love and flourish in joy and flourish in shalom and flourish with joy and prosperity. This is what Israel's kings were supposed to cultivate, and it rarely happened. The kings were failing. The kings of Israel were not bringing this kind of shalom prosperity. It rarely happened. So the prophet Isaiah said, there is going to be a future king who once and for all is going to make all things whole. Not just on the outside, not just in the circumstances of our work and our recreation and our vacation and our vocation. Instead, he's going to make things whole and complete. He's going to bring shalom in the inner life, on the inside. No more working for your own salvation, pleasing God, winning God's approval, trying to make sure that he justifies me. No more work, no more effort. This King Jesus comes and he does the work. He lives the life and he dies the death so you and I can have rest on the inside. And that's one of the best things that you experience when you go from far from God to faith and repentance and believing and receiving in Jesus. One of the things that happens is you have this wholeness that doesn't happen necessarily on the outside of your life and work and family. It happens on the inside. The wholeness and completeness that comes on the inside. And by the way, Jesus said he is the Prince of Shalom. He's the Prince of Peace. That he himself said, this peace that I am and this peace that I have, this peace I give to you. I offer that. There's nowhere else to find it. And Jesus arrives. He brings this new kind of peace. And in the New Testament, it's the word Irene, E-I-R-E-N-E, Irene. And the apostles claim that Jesus made peace between broken humans and a perfect God. And then all the other ways that we try to make peace with God are just toiling in vain. Religions, inspirational books, seminars, all these things that might be helpful, but there's no healing through it between our brokenness and God's perfect holiness. When he died, when he was raised from the grave, he finished the work, and he finally gave us all the peace that we ever needed on the inside for completeness and wholeness and shalom. I love the word shalom. I love it for my house. I love it for my heart. I love it for our church family. I love it for our world. God's responsible for making it happen, and we don't have to wait till the end where it's fully restored and all the pieces fully in place in eternity. We can find that peace on the inside right now through Jesus alone. Be careful where you're looking for your peace. I know some of you don't know me very well, and you're not quite sure, hey, do I trust this guy? So it's hard to receive some advice. But you're in a room full of people who started to pursue sometime, somewhere in their life, a little bit of peace outside of Jesus and found nothing but more heartache and more hardship. Finally, we circle back to Jesus and say, okay, I submit, I surrender. I'm going to start doing things your way. And there it comes, the inside shalom. And now Jesus' followers are compelled and sent to be people of peace and bring that kind of shalom to the world. That's a whole nother sermon, a whole nother series, bringing that shalom to the world. But Paul told local churches to keep their unity through the bond of peace, wholeness, completeness, which requires humility, it requires patience, it requires bearing with one another in love, forgiveness. Becoming people of peace means participating in the life of Jesus, who reconciled all things in heaven, reconciled all things on earth, and he brought peace through his death and his full resurrection. And that's the rich biblical picture of peace and joy and prosperity that comes from God. Would you pray with me? Father, today, just want to take a second and give time and room and space for our ears, our spiritual ears, to be in tune with your voice. As we listen for your voice, God, I pray that there would be a healing, deliverance, a rest, a shalom that settles deep in the hearts of people who are submitted to you, following you, who fear you. And we pray that true peace would bring healing to their brokenness, to their numbness, that you would restore to wholeness, whether it's in our lives, in our relationships, or in this world. That we would see your peace and joy and prosperity at work so that your people flourish as they gather together.